Wise concentration. Sama Samadhi is the last item in the Eightfold Path. It's been quite a journey this year. When you think of someone concentrating, you might imagine them hunched over and frowning, their hands and fists or gripping something with white knuckles. When I worked in an applied physics laboratory as a writer and editor of scientific papers, I developed a concentration practice that served me well. My background was not in science, but I've always loved examining how things work, diving into the details. So I would read through all the material with a razor-sharp focus, going back over sections that were unclear, slowly putting the argument, the approach, the purpose into an order in my mind. I was teased by my fellow editors because my breathing would slow so much while I was focusing that when I stood up or even just turned towards someone interrupting me, I'd get lightheaded and need to breathe. That is not what we're talking about when we speak of wise concentration, although it was, in my case, effective concentration for that purpose. But one thing I noticed, even though I was holding my breath, I was calm, my mind sharp, unless I forgot to stop for a break and exhaustion dulled me. But even then, I would be calm. When we collect our minds to focus on a task or on the breath, we find the calm that comes from letting all other matters float past for the moment. A few months ago, I decided to volunteer to give talks in the two folds of the Eightfold Path that I tend to wave away as, oh, that's obvious, wise effort and wise concentration. I didn't understand what the Buddha was pointing to with these other than the obvious. We must make an effort to walk the path, and we need to concentrate to stay on the path. Not incorrect, but so vague as to be of little help. Certainly little guidance. And although it might not be clear in the way I phrase that, I saw both as harsh, effortful aspects of the path, at least a bit of white knuckling. In October, I shared my experience exploring wise effort, appreciating how clearly it's defined. Marjorie Jansen's acronym PACE sums it up: preventing the arising of unwholesome states, abandoning those that have already arisen, cultivating wholesome qualities, extending and nourishing wholesome states that are present. And a note about the terms: abandoning might be an unfortunate choice because it suits the acronym, but it's not meant as a harsh rejection, but simply choosing not to continue to engage. I just want to clarify that this isn't a harsh practice. All of the Eightfold Path that came before and all that come after wise effort show us the way to approach this, not with white-knuckling effort, but with an open heart, a practice that guides us when we most need guidance or guardrails. Not a matter of pushing ourselves, but pausing, breathing, opening to what is here, and embracing the skillful, gently turning away from the unskillful over and over until the practice is natural for us, allowing the liberation to arise, allowing, not striving, untangling the tangle of our minds, our lives. I take this phrase from the title of a series of talks Christina Feldman gave here at Seattle Insight in 2015, Untangling the Tangle, working with two suttas that study the mind. But she took this phrase from a verse in yet another sutta, the Jada Sutta. And I use her translation: a tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Gotama, I ask you this: who can untangle this tangle? And the Buddha replies, a person established in integrity developing discernment and mindfulness, ardent and clear, they can untangle this tangle. Those whose passions, aversions, and ignorance have faded away, for them the tangle's untangled. So what is wise concentration's part in untangling the tangle? As soon as I gave the talk about wise effort, I moved on to researching wise concentration. And as is my way, I listened to or read many teachers on the topic. Tina Rasmussen, Sheila Catherine, Bhikkhu Bodhi, Thanissara Bhikkhu, Joseph Goldstein, Shinzen Young, Philip Moffat, Tuari Salah, Christina Feldman, and others. Woo! This was a lot of material. And as I moved through it, I'd develop a scheme for the talk that I would then abandon for something that felt more connected with the rest of the Eightfold Path, especially with wise view and intention. In effect, concentrating a little more with each scheme, the form mirroring the content, as a writer this tickled me. But I also realized something. All this research kept the topic at a slight distance. A slight detour into a topic that came up in many discussions of concentration, the jhanas, was helpful in an unexpected way. The jhanas, if you haven't encountered the term, and you will, are altered states arrived at through deep, often long meditation, deeper and deeper concentration, in which senses and even a sense of the body fall away. I had trouble seeing how reaching one of those states, as pleasant as it might be, would reap benefits that would help me move skillfully through daily life. I know how easily I shed the peace and transcendence of retreat within days, if not hours, of coming home. Although I carry the insights from a retreat and reflect on them often, but many say that the jhanas are not a source of insights, all thought falling away in the deep states of absorption. Philip Moffat says we can sometimes be mindful in these states, but others disagree. So this investigation did not prove helpful for my purposes, except for Thanissara Bhikkhu's description of how we arrive at them, that what one is transcending in the jhanas is everything that muddies the waters, threatens to knock us off the path, the tangle. In our practice with the Eightfold Path, we clear our minds and hearts. We turn from views, intentions, speech, acts, works, and efforts that muddy the waters, clench at our hearts, so that we can relax into concentration, into the silence. And in each level of jhana, we shed a little more until we're no longer even aware of the body. This suggested to me why wise concentration is the last item in the Eightfold Path. Because to fully concentrate, it helps to have embraced the other folds. Wise view, intention, speech, action, work, effort, and mindfulness. So that we might not be weighted down and distracted by remorse, that we might have peace of mind when we come to the cushion, or have sufficient calm to arrive at peace in our sit. You know how it goes. Sometimes the moment you sit down on the cushion, a recent argument rises up to confront you, or a thoughtless comment, a little white lie. It's difficult to settle when we're feeling remorse, though sometimes sitting with the feeling can be enlightening. Still, it's clear that a clear conscience eases the way to quiet. The steps in the Eightfold Path untangle the tangle of our minds, help us release all the detritus we collect as we tumble through life, the preconceptions, the paranoias, the prejudices, the ideas of who we are, the grudges, and allows us the clarity to see what's really present. I love this poem by Galway Connell, if I can find it now. Prayer. Whatever happens, whatever what is what I want. Only that, but that. So we've been gathering momentum throughout the year of studying the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And in these last three folds, we're learning how all this comes together for our practice. Wise effort showed us how to turn our minds from the unskillful toward the skillful, gently, patiently allowing our minds to learn to prefer the skillful. Wise mindfulness kept bringing us back to noticing. And now, wise concentration is a practice and the culmination of all of this. Always with the realization that this is a circular practice, the Eightfold Path, concentrating, bringing us back to wise view, wise intention, our actions smoothing out the way. Thinking this through helped me understand why concentration might be positioned last, even though each step requires focus. But Sama Samadhi, wise concentration, is a specific type of concentration. Sama Samadhi refers to training ourselves in focusing our minds on the skillful. And in order to do that, we train in quieting our minds, learning to allow thoughts to come and go as they will, without getting caught up in them. Philip Moffat speaks of being available. When our minds aren't distracted by the worldly winds, we're available to skillfully deal with whatever arises. We know this isn't easy. In a talk about concentration and meditation, Tina Rasmussen quoted an insane number of unnecessary thoughts mind researchers say we have every day, something like 350,000. That's quite a number. Our minds just churn and churn, and it can be destructive. It harms our nervous systems when we go into a negative spiral, obsessing over worries. She talks about concentration practice as building the muscle that allows us to naturally move to the skillful. The thoughts are still arising, but we simply let them arise and pass without engaging. Focusing on the breath, which our system finds calming, that trains our minds to be content with just breathing. A very healthy practice. The Buddha was ahead of his time. What a gift he gave us. Sharing what he came to understand as the way out of suffering. Quieting the mind by embracing skillful means. Living a life of skillful intention. And he described for us in detail the path to this liberating way of life. He taught that the foundation for concentration is sila, or ethical conduct, as Joseph Goldstein explains. Sila is the cause for non-remorse. Non-remorse, the condition for happiness. Happiness, the cause for concentration. And concentration, the condition for liberating wisdom. I'll repeat that. Sila is the cause for non-remorse. Non-remorse, the condition for happiness. Happiness, the cause for concentration. And concentration, the condition for liberating wisdom. Bhikkhu Bodhi describes the mind trained in concentration as free from distraction, inducing a softness and serenity. Quote, like a lake unruffled by any breeze, the concentrated mind is a faithful reflector that mirrors whatever is placed before it exactly as it is. Mirroring reality, seeing things as they are, isn't that what we're after? Setting aside our baggage, the perceptions conditioned by our family, schools, the culture at large, and seeing what is actually here before us. And to reach that, we need the entire Eightfold Path. I want to return to the unruffled lake as an example of using imagery, imagination as the focus of concentration. My first experience with Vipassana meditation was a weekend silent retreat at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in the Berkshires. I was there for a yoga retreat, but added the weekend at the beginning because after decades of yoga practice, I felt I'd never really meditated. I grew focused and centered with Hatha Yoga, but meditation eluded me. The teacher, John Travers, may have used the metaphor of our minds as a lake unruffled by any breeze, or I was just using the image of the lake I saw outside the window in one of the dining rooms. I loved watching it. However it happened, I found an image that weekend that drew me into a deep quiet as we sat. I imagined myself sitting cross-legged on my zafu as a mountain in a Japanese painting. And in my lap was a mountain lake, very still. And if I sat not only still, but emanating peace, the wildlife would come to the lake and feel safe to drink. It was all up to me. Still, peaceful, I benefited all the life around this lake and mountain. I saw this as a metaphor for meditation, concentration practice. If I gathered myself into this peaceful state, I would benefit everyone around me. I could feel that weekend how I moved off the cushion wearing that peace. I imagined my presence to be reassuring. And this was at a time when it felt like a practice the world needed. I'll say a little more of that. While in the yoga retreat afterward, I kept touching back into that image, that sense of nurturing peace within, so that I radiated peace. I don't recall what John Travers said that weekend, but he made me hungry for the Dharma. When I think back on that, I'm amazed. I'd had a long, weird journey to get there. It was a few weeks after 9/11, and the airlines had limited service. So I flew from Seattle to Dallas-Fort Worth, then Charlotte, North Carolina, and then to Albany, in sparsely loaded planes where everyone was nervous, but very friendly. It was actually a wonderful experience in a way. And then I had a long cab ride in a cab to the center. I'd planned the trip to help me grieve for my dad. I was worried about my widowed mother who just had a hip replacement. And I was recovering from a sprained ankle. So I was rattled by the time I sat down on the cushion that Friday night. And yet, the image I came up with drew me into quiet, stilled all the noise in my head for long stretches. Even though every night the center hosted a satsang for those who had come up from New York City to recover from the horror of 9/11, and they were welcome to speak of it, bear witness. This practice helped me hold their stories in love, metta, not spinning up in the tension. You can see why I was sold on meditation. Philip Moffat says, right concentration is the ability to collect and unify the mind. Without this concentration, we can't stay connected to our intention, our purpose. So we cultivate this concentration in meditation. This is why we meditate. With meditation, we're training our minds to come to clarity, focus on what's essential, skillful, be available. If at some point we experience the jhanas, that's wonderful. But it's not the goal. We're not working toward a goal. We're practicing the practice of bringing our minds to clarity so we make skillful choices. Wisdom will arise from this quiet place as we open our hearts, able to receive it. We gently bring our minds back to whatever we've chosen as our point of concentration as best we are able. This gentleness is crucial. The white knuckling is not conducive to skillful thoughts. It draws us back into the tangle of doubt, insecurity, I'm not good enough, comparing mind, judging mind, fixing mind. Philip talks about being responsive rather than reactive to what we perceive. And in order to do that, it's important to develop relaxed attention. The quality of concentration that allows our mind to soften into the experience rather than contract around it or dissociate from it. Various methods and focuses of concentration are available. Breath, body, sounds. If you're settled enough, you can even sit with an emotion. And as I shared the lake, there's imagery. A few weeks ago, we hosted a retreat with Philip Moffitt. He teaches a beautiful arriving practice for beginning our meditation. We arrive in our bodies, mindful presence on the cushion, feeling the solidity and support of our bones, earth, our breath, air, the warmth of our body and our emotions, fire, and all that's circulating and moving in our bodies, mind activity as well as blood, water. Now that we've arrived, we choose to be available, present, and we align ourselves with the Dharma, the path, something larger than the ego. This entire sequence is practice in concentration. When I'm guiding a meditation, I often begin with a body relaxation sequence, a body scan. It helps us relax and settle, and it eases us into concentration. Once we've relaxed from the toes up to the top of the head, we might have an insight into what's the most natural focus point for us in the sitting. Breath, the body, either one part or gently attending areas that need more relaxation, or perhaps sound is what settles us, or an image. The concentration is the point. How we achieve it isn't so important. We notice when we're drifting away and we return. No fuss, no judging. We simply begin again. Like Tina Rasmussen says, we're working the muscle. I've been experimenting with this during the day, noticing when I begin to contract around something, and seeing if I can soften and attend to what's arising. Say an irritating email. I sit with the feeling, focus on it, breathe with it, get to know it. Not the story, but the feeling. And then I go back to the email and reread it. What I've found is that the charge is gone, and I can actually read what it says. It's often quite different from what I thought I read the first time. No reaction, just gathering facts. It's that mountain lake again, mirroring reality. But we have to be still to do that. Wise concentration, Sama Samadhi, it's the culmination of the Eightfold Path, and we need it all the way through. It's a critical tool in alleviating unnecessary suffering. It's the way toward working with the entire path, circular, always returning, practicing the practice. It isn't achieved by striving. It's realized. It arises as a result of our devoted practice. It's a gift we give ourselves. A tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Gautama, I ask you this. Who can untangle this tangle? A person established in integrity, developing discernment and mindfulness, ardent and clear, they can untangle this tangle. Those whose passions, aversions, and ignorance have faded away, for them the tangles untangle. May your practice untangle the tangle, and may you find peace and radiate that peace out into our troubled world. May it be so.